All right, my friends, this is a curated episode. So I'm going back into my archives, and I'm pulling out episodes that I remember as being particularly interesting. And in this episode, this is episode 58, where I interviewed Jeff Galloway. Very interesting. And this is an episode from the first version of the Run, Run, Live podcast. I interviewed Jeff, and I believe it was early in the year of 2009, maybe February. And I had been at the podcast for probably a year and a half or so. And I was thoroughly enjoying my running then. I just rolled off a successful 50-miler in the fall and was qualified for Boston. And you can hear in this episode, I ran to work and back in the middle of the winter, 17 and a half miles each direction. Crazy. But I knew I was getting older, right? I was probably 47 at the time. And I was thinking about how I could do a soft landing, right? How I could adjust my competitiveness to stay in the game without overdoing it. How to coexist with an endurance lifestyle, get the good bits without having it take up too much of my life or hurt me. And one of the reasons I wanted to talk to Jeff was that I wanted to know how he had done this transition so successfully. And you can hear me probing for this in the interview. And I was confident in my podcast. You can hear that confidence. And I had discovered that these semi-famous running personalities like Jeff were extremely approachable. The audio quality is terrible. I was never an audiophile, and I used this cheap USB mic for a lot of the early episodes. I was trying different things. It was very creative time. And my theory then, as it is now, is if you want to do something, just do it and do it poorly until you figure it out. And it's got the old intro where every week I would invite someone from the community to call in with an intro. And that was really fun. And people love the voices of the community, but it was a real pain in the butt to chase these people down, edit the stuff into the show. I'd have to beg for entries and then try to fix the audio when the entries came in because they were always terrible audio. And I used to crank this out every week. And I was able to do that because I recorded a lot of segments on the fly while out running with Buddy, doing that dual tasking. So I hope you enjoy it. I edited out the music at the end. I used to drop some music, some shareware kind of music at the end. And I edited out the original outro, which is not pertinent anymore, has misleading information. So let me know your thoughts. Cheers.
Run, run, live. The podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. Oh, Ned, he laughed so hard that made me cry.
Right, take 42. Welcome to the Run, Run, Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favourite pair of shoes and get out there. This is not Chris, your host. This is Sheila. I'm the guest announcer this week. When you're done listening to the Run, Run, Live podcast, come visit me at, well, actually, unless you catch a flight, which of course you would be very welcome to, I have no blog to visit. Computers are too much of a challenge for me. So, and wherever and whenever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in. Well, actually, not technically now, maybe later. You ready to have some fun? Come on then, let's go for a run. I'll just watch.
Police tape outlines a badly mauled body on the canyon floor. The CSI team hunches over, inspecting.
Hey, Griffin, ID is going to be difficult. The coyotes are really torn him up.
Yes, you know, Catherine, they're drawn to carrion with high adipose content. It gives them more energy during the mating season.
Geez, what a mess. How are we supposed to figure out who it was?
Follow the evidence, Catherine. What do you make of the hat?
It's the 2005 Boston Marathon. For a 40-something-year-old guy, that only narrows it down to about 4,000 potentials.
And the shirt?
Well, if he ran the Eastern States 20-miler in 2005 as well, it probably gets us to under 50 probables when we cross-reference.
And how about the shorts?
MEC. What is that? Some sort of club?
That's the Mountain Equipment Co-op. It's a Canadian-based sporting goods co-op that you have to buy a membership in.
So we cross-reference a 40-something guy with Boston 05, ES 2005, who shops in Canada, and we've got him?
Simple deduction. Scene cuts to morgue, coroner, and Grissom. So, what have you got on our friend here, Doc?
Well, he's got high levels of certain well-being enhancing chemicals in his bloodstream. Do you think he's a doper?
No, that's common with endurance athletes.
Gil, I've autopsied this guy, and he wasn't much of an athlete.
Well, I believe they called him mid-packers. And even though they have little athleticism, they still try to do things like run up mountains. It's not an uncommon psychosis.
Well, the other strange thing is that he was carrying a lot of extra weight around the middle for an endurance athlete.
Yes, and the irony is, if he could have pushed back from that burrito buffet just one or two more times, he might have been able to make that turn on this switchback. Grissom.
Hey, I analyzed his iPod and found some weirdness.
Hey, Catherine, just the facts, please.
Well, this dude had a bizarre mix of music from classical to punk rock.
Yeah, sounds like he's probably a borderline schizophrenic. Might have been having an episode on the mountain. Anything else?
Can I keep the shoes? ASICS trail shoes are cool.
Well. Hello, my mid-packer friends, my masters, mavens, and Methuselahs of the mid-pack. Look it up. It means old people, kind of. Hey, so you may ask me, Chris, what exactly is the mid-pack? What's a mid-packer? Well, thank you for asking. Your curiosity adds greatly to my personal feeling of well-being. And I would direct you to a story I wrote called The Mid-Packer's Lament. And as a matter of fact, I have a copy of it read into audio. Huh. And I'm going to stick it in this episode towards the end. So I'm going to have to squeeze some other stuff out because it's about 8 minutes long. So I'll do a skip the equipment check and the quick tip. Squeeze it in. I'll still probably be a little bit long because my interview is long. Feel free to complain. I apologize for the lack of rigor. But variety is the spice of life. So, here's my quick equipment check for you. I did kill my yak tracks. I snapped one of the 4-foot coils in half. So, the answer to how long do yak tracks last is about one winter. C'est la vie. And here's my quick tip for you for today's episode. For running in traffic, because I did a lot of running in traffic this week. You got to pay attention to where the sun is, especially in the morning and the late afternoon. People get hit because drivers can't see them. And I always run into traffic so I can take evasive action if necessary. So I'm running with the cars coming at me, right? And if you're running into traffic and the sun is in your eyes and you can't see your own shadow, then it's okay. The cars coming at you can see you. But if the sun is behind you or you're looking down at a long shadow, and the longer the shadow, the worse it's going to be, the sun is directly in their eyes. And they can't see you. So if your shadow is pointing at the car, then that driver potentially cannot see you. And you got to pay attention, because a lady got killed in a crosswalk a couple years back in my town because the afternoon sun was in the driver's eye. And she was in the crosswalk. But, you know, she was right, but it doesn't really matter that she was right, does it? So anyhow, this story that I'm going to stick in the back, the Mid-Packer's Lament, in the back of the show, actually comes from the second book of short stories on running that I wrote, and I tried to put it up as an ebook, but nobody wants that kind of ebook. So when I get the time, I'll set up a link and give it away to you, assuming that there are people out there who can still read more than 140 characters at a time without losing interest. I know the number is dwindling. You can actually buy my first book, ironically of the same name, The Midpacker's Lament, but it doesn't have that story in it. I know, I'm terrible at this stuff. In actual dead tree form from Amazon, and I will get close to $5 of profit into my hot little hands after the friendly publisher take their shekels out of it. So, anyhow, hey, welcome. Welcome to episode 58 of the Run, Run, Live podcast. If you're a new listener, I do this gig on running here, and I try to keep it around 40 minutes. And I try to talk to somebody interesting for most of that time. Which is good news, because I've got a killer interview today with the famous, or near famous, Mr. Jeff Galloway, for you. It was an awesome interview today. You're going to dig it. And I never interacted with Jeff before. I never spoke to him, so I was wondering what he would be like. And it's funny, you know, because he's one of these guys, you always hear their people talking about the Galloway method. Like when I talked to Bart Yasso, and he's you know, somehow Bart is known for inventing the 800-meter run, and Jeff's known for inventing walking like nobody ever walked in a race before. Jeff showed up, right? So, hey, man, I had a great week. You know, I'm working like a fiend, not getting much sleep, but as I was mentioning in previous episodes, I started to fall in love with the idea of running to work. And when I'm not traveling, I drive to work, and I work about 17.5 miles from door to door, from my house to my office. So Monday, I scoped it out. I drove to work. And Wednesday, I just did it. And it was cool. It was an adventure. And it wasn't that hard. Because I'm marathon training anyhow. So I'm at about that distance. It was cold. It was like 15 degrees. My water bottle froze. But I learned a lot. And I'm going to do it again next week. And I took some audio. And I sent it over to Kevin at the Extra Mile Podcast. So go listen to that there. But you know what? We're going to have to do this. This is going to have to be our thing. The Run to Work Club. We're going to have to get everybody to run to work one day a week because it was totally cool, and it really made a statement. So the heat's totally gone in my old truck anyhow, so at least when I'm running to work, I'm staying a little bit warmer. And I'm gonna start a whole new thing here, Run to Work Day. So who's with me? Come on, let's do it. We'll make the world a better place. Next week when I do it, I'm gonna have to take some pictures. I'm also going to put an advertisement on my back for my race, the Groton Road Race. www.gruttonroadrace.com. And by the way, thank you to Steve over at Fidipidations, the most professional and well-produced podcast on running in the world. And he gave me a bunch of airtime on my road race. So thank you, Steve. That's great. And if you want to come up and run, that's awesome. It's going to be in Groton, Massachusetts on April 26th. And I figure if I put some sort of sign on my back on all those 30,000 commuters that passed me while I was running might show up at my race. It's a premier race in New England in the spring. So come up, run with me. I'll do something nice for you. And thanks to Brett, a.k.a. Texifornia, over at Zen and the Out of Triathlon podcast. He gave me his hummus recipe. I made it, and it was awesome. And there's a scam, huh? I've been buying hummus at $4 a tin, and you can make the stuff for 99 cents worth of garbanzo beans, or chickpeas, depending on what part of the world you're from, and it's awesome, and it tastes the same, and it's easy. So we'll have to sneak in a recipe on that one of these podcasts. The intro today was done by Sheila, and wasn't that awesome? I thought that was hilarious. She's got such a great voice. And such a great attitude. And so I know I had heard her voice before. She sent submissions to the Extra Mile podcast. I apologize to her for thinking she was an Australian. You know, what can I do? I'm losing my mind. The other podcast I listened to this week was something like The Lagan Runner. It's some guy from Ireland. And I just love the brogue. Reminds me of me old Nana saying to me mum, whose name, of course, is Margaret Mary. But they called her Peggy, of course. And, you know, my grandmother would say something like, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, Peggy. I love it when they say stuff like, I went out at 5:30 to take the kids sledging. That's awesome. So anyhow, the CSI skit I did with my little one, and as the intro here, it's because I run all over the world, and I almost never take any ID with me. I just cut out of these hotels and go run up a mountain somewhere. So I often wondered how they'd figure out who I was when they found me. So that skit came to me one morning when I was running up a mountain in Tucson at the crack of dawn. And it's also from a story that I wrote in my second book. I could go on forever, but then where would we be? On with the show.
Hey there, my friends. This is Chris and Buddy the Wonder Dog. Hey, Boo. How you doing? He's marking his territory, as usual. He's got his winter fat on. Gotta slim him down pretty soon. We're down by the pond. He's walking out on the ice. Not too far, though. He doesn't trust the ice. But I'm looking. The snow's really receding. It's kind of a hard, cold drizzle here, about 35 degrees. We just ran down here. It's about, you know, 2.5-3 miles out to where I'm standing here from my house. And it's nice. It's. But I'm looking around, and the snow's come down. All these sweet birch around here, brown birch, sweet birch, black birch, depending on which part of the world you're from, they're all cut down by the beavers. They're all about taken about a foot high off the ground, sharpened like pencils. Like somebody with a big knife sharpened them, and wood chips laying around. So my friends the beavers are out building houses, or they were in the fall before the ice storm came. And you really see, now that the snow's receding a little bit, you really see all the damage, all the limbs down and everything. It's a little tough running because there's sharp, pointy bits sticking up out of the snow. But I wanted to, I got an email this morning from some nice lady over in Scotland who said, oh, I really like the show, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it was so nice that I told her that I was selling all my belongings and flying over to live with her. But, of course, I am just kidding. Yeah, so it's been tough. You know, there's one thing I want to talk about because, you know, she mentioned, oh, I'll never be as good a runner as you or that sort of thing. You know, guys, I am not an elite runner. You know, I run races because it's what I do. I got a lot of accumulation, but, you know, not a lot of trophies. The difference between me and you is you get to enjoy the race course much longer than I do. Neither of us are standing on the medal stand. Neither of us are taking home the toaster. So, other than that, there's no difference. It's like I say to people on the airplanes when they start pushing and shoving and acting mean. I say, hey, folks, we're all going the same place. Just sit back and try to get along and enjoy the ride. So, there's really no difference between my 96th place finish and somebody else's 300th place finish. Like I said, except that you get to enjoy the course for another couple hours. We all put in the same amount of work.
And now for our featured interview.
Hello again.
We're back.
Yeah, we're back. No, that's my line. So Jeff Galloway, the famous Jeff Galloway, it's such a treat to talk to you.
Well, it's great to be here. You're doing a great job, Chris.
Yeah, I guess you do something every weekend, but what was the most recent thing I was reading about you were talking about? What was your most recent thing you were involved?
Well, most recent, we conducted one of my beach retreats all weekend down here on the panhandle of Florida. It's wonderful. 300 miles of trails and no snow and ice. It's absolutely great. But weekend before that, the breast cancer marathon.
Yeah, that's what I was reading about.
I'm one of the major instigators of that event because I truly believe that we must raise money for research, and in this case, 100% of the entry fee goes to breast cancer research and care. It's a very unique event.
Great. So it sounds like you were commenting in the post that I read that you had made that the organization was real good and everybody had a wonderful time.
Absolutely. I'm one of the biggest cheerleaders.
Yeah. So you, my friend, are sort of a famous guy in terms of running here. But what's interesting about you is your target audience now is more of the sort of middle of the pack, back of the pack folks, helping people learn how to run, helping people, you know, finish marathons comfortably and stuff. So how'd you make that transition?
Well, I also help a good number of folks that qualify for Boston every year, but I do not work with elite athletes. I do not have any Kenyans in my e-coach client, among my e-coach clients. But the shift started fairly early, even when I was training for the Olympics and racing at that level. People would come up to me, kids would come up to me, often beginning kids, sometimes fat kids like I was when I started at age 13, and they would say, how do you get started? What are the problems here? Or they'd come up with problems, and I became a problem solver, and I embraced that role. It's a wonderful thing to be able now to solve, or at least provide a solution to practically every problem that comes up.
Sure.
And it's really based on the fact that the folks that I speak with counsel, e-coach, and are in our training programs or retreats, get back to me. They tell me how the advice has worked, and they also tell me when it hadn't worked, too. We've had over 250,000 people now go through our various programs. And so once you get enough feedback, you can really know pretty much what's going on.
So you're actually the race director for that breast cancer.
The title is more of a chairman of the board type of position. I am really not the race director. I'm the event director, and that is orchestrate mostly at a distance, provide feedback and help with the organization. Most of that has been done. The first year was last year, and we went through a lot of work putting that together, but it was a huge success, raised almost $1 million the first year.
Wow. That's great.
Over 8,000 people.
Wow, that's great for a first-year race. So well done. So it's interesting to me that you're the, you know, whenever anybody ever says they're going to start walking in a race, they're doing the Galloway method, right?
So somehow
you've become responsible for inventing walking, my friend.
Well, I'm proud to be blamed for that, but the reality is, as we all know, running and walking is something that our ancient ancestors did to cover thousands of miles a year. It's just part of our genetic makeup to do that in order to cover long distances. A lot of the physiologists believe that if we ran continuously, most people are going to crash at around 20 to 21 miles, and there are a lot of reasons for that. But once you add walking to the mix, you extend the cruising range for virtually everyone in our society to cover a marathon or just about whatever else beyond that.
Right, and you don't necessarily take a whole lot away from your finishing time, which is a tough nut for people to get their heads around.
Well, the average improvement, and I've done numbers surveys on this, the average improvement when people used to run continuously and then shift to my run-walk-run method is over 13 minutes faster with run-walk-run. The reason is that you don't slow down at the end, and anybody who has run a marathon more than five times knows how much you can slow down at the end.
So
and the walk breaks keep you on track. They keep erasing fatigue. You never get behind because during the next 3 to 4 minutes, whatever that you're running, you catch right back up with those poor souls that were not taking walk breaks.
Right. And so by avoiding the what I call the death shuffle down there on Boylston Street, you're actually saving time by spreading it out. People always make the mistake of saying, okay, these are just the weak and the injured at the back of the pack, but this also holds true for people who are, you know, mid-pack or upper mid-pack. Somebody running a 320 or a 310 or, you know, somewhere in the bell curve can also benefit from throwing some walk breaks into their race.
I've actually counseled over 100 people who were trying to break 3 hours in the marathon and couldn't do it by running continuously. And when they put walk breaks in to the mix, all 100-plus of them got back with me and were able to get 5 to 7 minutes of time improvement through the walk breaks. And they qualified for Boston, or they broke that big 3-hour barrier. The fastest is a guy who improved his time from 2:33 to 2:28.
Wow.
So it does have applicability right on down. I don't even pretend to offer advice to elite athletes, but I do believe that a few strategically placed walks at water stops, if for no other reason than to get a little bit of water down, would be productive, and it would also break up the continuous use of the muscle, which is really the principle here. It's well known by physiologists and those who coach athletes that if you run continuously at a certain pace and form method, you're going to use up the tendons and muscles more quickly. If you take a break, and this is the whole principle of interval training, we're basically just doing an interval training during a long race like a marathon.
Right. Yeah, it makes it, it breaks it up too in your mind. It makes it periodic. Because I do, when I run Boston now, I take walk breaks, right?
And right.
It's mostly for me, it's so I don't finish with a death shuffle, right? So
that
time may end up being plus or minus a minute and a half the same,
yep.
You know, either way. But when I cross the finish line, I'm smiling.
Yep.
I'm not going to the med tent and getting the intravenous, right?
Well, you've put your finger on that in terms of the mental part of it. Instead of thinking at mile 20 you have six more gut-wrenching miles to go, you're thinking one more mile or four more minutes, whatever it is that you're doing. And that takes a huge psychological burden off of most people in a race. And the other huge benefits you also mentioned, the quicker recovery, much quicker, the ability to celebrate that evening instead of hit the couch or the bed.
Yeah. And what I found was that in earlier in the race, it helps you be more rigorous about pacing. Because if you get, like you always do, if you get sucked out too fast in a big race, and you're at the 5 mile mark and you're 2 minutes ahead of pace, you can say, okay, I'm just going to walk for 5 minutes, and I'm going to get back within 30 seconds of my target pace and keep going, right? So it allows you to, you can use walking to regulate your pacing. So instead of, if you would maintain that pace, you'd hit about 13 miles and then say, oh, God, I'm going to have to hang on now, right?
Well, you have picked up on the salient points here by using it. You didn't even attend one of my running schools or retreats, and you've got it, Chris. I'm impressed.
I got my own laboratory I work with here, my own big old hairy body.
That's great.
And the other thing I found, which is the other reason it's real good, is that it gives you milestones in the race to look forward to.
Yes.
So when you get out to, like, mile 20, if you're doing, what I do is I do a, take a two-minute walk at the water stop. So I'm drinking and doing nutrition at the same time I'm walking. And
right.
And you're not sitting down on the curb. You're still moving forward.
Right.
And if you're moving forward at a crisp walk, you're walking 3 miles an hour.
Yeah.
You're not losing that much time.
Right.
And like you said, it's breaking up your pace. So anyhow, if you do that at Boston, that means you're going to get a walk break in right before heartbreak, which is an awesome milestone in terms of wrapping your head around hitting the hill, right?
Let me give you a little suggestion, and that is and of course all these things are individual. So basically you should do what works best for you. But I have found that for the vast numbers of folks that I work with, you don't tend to get any more benefit from a two-minute walk than you get from a one-minute walk.
Yeah.
And so the principle is to take the walk breaks more frequently and only take 1 minute at a time. That, you know, if I were coaching you, that's what I'd recommend. But, again, you need to do what works for you, so go with what works.
Yeah, well, you know, like you said, you know, it's to avoid that five-minute or ten-minute walk down Boylston Street is where
Absolutely.
You're doing it, right?
Absolutely.
And I know for a fact my friends who run sub-3-hour marathons, they may not have planned walks every five miles or so, but they will, you know, somewhere in the 20 to 23-mile range, stop and walk a little bit just to collect their thoughts for that last push.
Almost everybody who runs almost every marathon does some walking during that marathon. It's a dirty little secret among the run-only crowd. You pin them down, and at some water stop or somewhere, they have put in a walk. The most interesting story is I help bring a group over to Greece every year to do the original marathon over there.
Oh, that's
and,
so cool.
Oh, it's a wonderful experience, just a great series of visits to the heritage sites of running. But we were in a museum several years ago, and I saw a clipping that looked like it was from 1896, and I brought over our guide who verified that fact and read the whole clipping to me. It was from a journalist who had gotten caught right before the start of the marathon over in the seaside town in 1896, right before the first Olympic marathon, and he followed the runners on a goat cart or something, some type of a cart, and his comment was that every one of those original marathoners walked significant portions of that marathon.
Yep.
So walking was actually part of our sport from day one.
Yep, and if you can figure it out, then you're good to go for the ultramarathon, too.
That's absolutely right. My major role has been to break down frequency of walk break according to the pace, so that based on the data from the tens of thousands in each pace category, I found that a person who is running, say, a 9 minute per mile pace is best off doing a 4 and 1, whereas when they go to 10 minute per mile, 3 and 1 works better.
4 minutes and 1 minute?
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah, I just lined it up with 5 miles because that's about 40 minutes for me,
mm-hmm.
and that lines up with my nutrition, right, with my fueling.
Good.
And also with my hydration, I tend to burn through 40 ounces of water in 40 minutes. So
great
hot day. So that's cool. So what would you do? Let's take the range, right? So if you had somebody like me who's, you know, 3:30, let's say.
That is run 4 minutes and walk 30 seconds.
Okay.
And that, a lot of people are using that at that pace now. A lot of folks who were, say, 10 to 15 minutes away from that time have found they can get down to 3:30 when they use that frequency.
Now, when you're walking, what pace are you walking? I'm very in tune with the pace I'm walking because I ran the Mount Washington Road Race last year.
Oh boy!
And there's a lot of walking involved.
Yes.
And so I spent a lot of time on the treadmill at 18%, walking at, you know, 3 or 3.5 miles an hour as a power walk, right?
Yeah.
So I know what 3.5 miles an hour is, and I think that's very doable.
Well, a lot of my people walk at that pace because they do time it. However, most of the folks that I work with don't really have a clue, and when they do verify the pace, they find that it's all over the place. So I do not even try to suggest a walking pace. That's a very individual thing. In our Galloway groups, we have these training groups based on pace all over the country in 75 cities, and what we find is that in the running portion, each pace group stays together, but during the walk, they spread out like crazy.
Huh.
And so we do not try to dictate a walking pace. That should be a walk that is paced so that each individual feels that he or she is recovering during that walk break.
That's interesting because when I was doing my ultra training, there's a lot of focus on the walking, right? Because that's a big part of the race, and making it a power walk, an uphill power walk, and a certain pace and a certain form. Do you
well,
do anything
actually,
on walking form?
My experience with the ultra folks, and I've coached a number of them, is that they're much more laid back in terms of trying to do one specific thing, even than marathoners. They really, it's all over the place as to what they do. So I would say that any walking pace that works is really what the person should do.
Yeah, as long as you're moving forward, it's all good.
That's correct. And we've also done surveys with individuals to see how much they lose when they walk for a minute. And let's take somebody that's running at about a 9 minute per mile pace. That person averages out, a 9 minute per mile person, when they walk to recover, they average losing not a full minute, but only 15 seconds.
Right, exactly.
And so that means that during the next 4 minute, they only have to make up less than 4 seconds every minute, which is very easy to do.
Yeah, and you're going to find that you run a lot faster in the in-between runs if you're doing the walks.
Our biggest problem, you're correct, our biggest problem is that people feel so empowered after taking one of those walk breaks that they just take off, and we have to corral them in.
Right. Especially early in the race.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because, like I said, when I run that way at Boston, I look at my splits because they take them every 5K, right?
Right.
And I can see the walks, and then I can see the runs. And, you know, when I go back on running, I'm running way faster than a 3:30 pace.
Yeah. Yeah. Very common.
So it's not till later in the race that I find my pace. So that's funny. The other thing you talked about, I lost it now, but what about somebody who's doing we get a lot of folks, and I know you talk to a lot of these folks, who are doing 6 hour, 6.5 hour marathons, you know.
Trying to beat the bus that picks them up.
Yeah, trying to stay one step ahead of the sag wagon.
Yep.
What's the recommendation for those guys?
Well, the recommendation for everybody is pretty consistent in training for a marathon, and that is you build the long run up to at least 26 miles.
Yep.
I found that that gives the most endurance and causes one to slow down the least, if not speed up, during the last 6 miles once they put the walk breaks in. So the longer long runs are really beneficial, and I even, for time goal folks, recommend going up to 29 miles.
Because
in surveys, there's an average of 11 minutes faster when people go from 26 miles as the longest run up to 29 miles. Three more miles, 11 minutes of time improvement on the average.
Right, but you're not doing those at goal pace. You're doing those at 2 minutes per mile slower than goal pace or something like that?
Not even goal pace. I work off current pace. I don't let people say, well, my goal pace is such, so I'm going to run 2 minutes per mile slower. Well, they may not have a prayer of running goal pace.
Right.
And so what we do in our Galloway programs is we have a magic mile time trial that pretty much nails what someone's capable of currently doing. And we can also work off a recently run marathon. So I'll take either one of those as the means of setting up a realistic current pace.
So you drag somebody down to the track and have them run a mile? Are they running a mile at, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, what's the effort level that they're running that mile at?
Well, the first one, first magic mile that's done early in the program, we just do that mainly to sort people out and to get a time. And I tell everyone, just run about the pace that you normally run, and if you want to pick it up a tiny bit at the end, go ahead, but don't sprint, you know. We don't want anybody overdoing it in the first one. So they get that time, and then on each successive one, our instructions are to run faster than they ran before.
Right.
And not only does this show improvement, because practically everybody improves on practically every one of the magic miles, but by the time that they've run four of them, most folks are down around what they could run for a mile because they teach themselves how to do it.
Yep. Yep.
And it's a hard effort. It's a hard effort level. But what I have found after tens of thousands of people now turning in these times is that you tend to slow down 30% when you go from a fast 1 mile by itself to a per-mile pace in a very hard marathon.
Hmm.
So we take that that magic mile time multiplied by 1.3, that says what the current capability would be per mile in an all-out effort.
Yeah.
And then we would add 2 minutes to that for the long run pace, and then we add further if there's heat, because I found over the years, most of our people being living in the southern portion of the United States, that you're going to tend to slow down 30 seconds a mile for every 5 degrees above 60. So
okay.
If you make that change early, then you're not one of the ones that they have to scrape off the road at the end or wind
sure.
up in the medical tent.
Yeah, been there, done that. Actually, I've never been to the med tent. I have friends
Good.
Who go there every year. They don't consider it a successful race unless they end up in the med tent, but you know,
well,
that's a psychology thing.
I'm not into that. I'm not into death, and I'm against death, as a matter of fact. I know that that is a losing battle, but I'm against it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, heat disease is a very dangerous situation.
It is, and I would add that the extreme cold, because I know you're not from this part of the country, but I've seen people keel over from the stress of an extreme cold as well. So.
Well, that can happen too. But
you have to, just if your body's under some extreme stress, you got to take it easy.
Yeah, and I will issue, since you know we're on the air, I will issue a caution and an opportunity here, and that is among a lot of the folks that I work with who used to be of that opinion that they're just going to run until they can't run anymore, once they back off, make those adjustments early, the general rule is that whatever you save in the first half of a marathon, you'll be able to use up in the last 6 miles. And the other concept is that you can feel strong all the way through, even during the last 6 miles, while winding up with a faster time. It's the same deal as the walk break concept of not slowing down.
Yeah, and it's also, but you know, it's still work. You're still running a marathon. You're just
sure gonna, are.
But
only
I'll tell you what, your finishing photos are much nicer.
Yes, and your time is usually faster.
Yep, I've had good luck walking into my run, so I'm all for it. We're running out of time here, so how do people find what you're doing, and how do they get engaged with you and throw some shekels in your direction?
Well, simply go to runinjuryfree.com or jeffgalloway.com, either one. There's a whole bunch of content there that's free. You'll see my books that are specific to specific goals, our retreats and running schools and training programs. And if anybody wants to start a Galloway program, they can just go to the site and email us and be glad to help them. There's also a music with walk breaks that we have as a product there. So
good.
Yeah.
You're going to have to do the Jeff Galloway walking podcast.
Well, maybe someday, but I do have a lot of things on the burner right now.
Yeah, you're pretty busy. You know, looking out the window, I could be talked into a training trip to the Florida Panhandle right now. But
really wonderful down here. 60 degrees.
Too hot. Too hot.
Just wonderful.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to do something silly tomorrow. I'm going to run to work. And I'm going to get up early and run to work. And I work about 30K from where I live.
So wow. That's a long run.
Fun. Yeah, fairly long run. I've already done a 20.
What's the weather predicting to be?
Yeah, no, just around freezing, mid-20s.
Well, don't freeze.
Okay. All right, man. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Chris, great to talk anytime.
Let me know. Look forward to talking to you some more, all right?
Same here.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Midpackers Lament. Although this article has the same name as the title of my first book, it was not included. It was written after, when thinking about just what it meant to be a midpacker. Subtitle: Middling Runners of the World Unite! Are you a member of the midpack? You may ask, how do I know? Here's a quick rule of thumb. Look at the results of the last big local 5K that you ran. Throw out the top 10% of each age group, then throw out the slowest 10%. Are you still there? Then you're one of us. Welcome to the club. Welcome to the tribe. Welcome to the secret society of serious but average runners who fill out the midsection of our sport. Have you been with us long, or are you just joining? I've got a lifetime membership. Come on in and let me show you around. Come out for a run with us. We're friendly and a talkative bunch. We enjoy what we're doing. We laugh a lot. We laugh at ourselves and each other. Our victories come in local triumphs over ourselves. We may not hang around to see who gets the trophies, because we know that we won't. Only occasionally, through perseverance, luck, or the vagaries of local demographics, is one of our members accidentally thrust into the limelight. You may find us clustered in the parking lot sharing a warm conversation or a cold beer. We will be taking turns, recounting some exaggerated incident or racing tall tale. You can join us. All you need to bring is your smile and your stories. We will take liberties with your geniality and rehash your races with you. We will add you to the human stew of our never-ending running story. We don't own anything, nor do we act with any proprietary. There is nothing to hide, no power to share. We are all threads of varying lengths and color in the common tapestry of shared experience. We have no membership rules, duels, or application process in the midpack, although there may be some hazing. You don't even have to run. All we ask is that you jump into the melange of experience. We are a varied group in the midpack. Our membership roles contain the names of has-beens, never-weres, and a few will-bes. Some of our members used to wear the laurel wreath in high school or college. They have since been demoted by age or injury to our ranks. In the middle corrals with the rest of us, they no longer break the tape. For the most part, they have made peace. They have made the hard mental and physical transition. They are not sad or to be pitied. They hold on to their love of the sport through participation and interaction. They are the sages, mentors, and seasoned administrators of our company. They get joy from the rest of us, and occasional glimpses of past glory out on the course. Perhaps it is out-dueling a foe, a strong kick, or a crafty move that keeps them coming back to run with us, even though they will not attain again the performances of their peak. They share their experience with an easy smile that belies experience, and an inner strength that whispers, "If you only knew the things I've done." They help the newbies with simple advice and caution. They don't overbear, they shepherd, they assuage, and they parent. Then there are those of us who have always been here. We may have competed in school, but even then we were in the fat part of the pack. The coaches had to fill out the rosters, and we were there. We have big hearts, but little inherited talent. We train as hard as the others. We put in the lonely miles and suffer the hard training injuries and with determined stoicism. We tell great stories and laugh too loudly. We pay our way. We have shoe boxes full of bib numbers and finishers' medals. We have all the professional gear and gewgaws like the elites, but for all this, we seldom find ourselves on the platform, nor do we expect to. We are the full-time residents, the long-time members of the mid-pack. If we were racehorses, they would have rendered us for glue and cheap dog food years ago. We are the proletariat of the sport, the economic engine. We are the assets. We are das Kapital. And we are the means of production. There are also new members entering the mid-pack who have no prior experience with our sport. They're brought into the fold every day. They get to a certain point in their lives and turn somehow to running. Maybe it starts as a resolution to get in shape or lose weight. Maybe the ravages of a bourgeois career and baby-making have left them one belt loop or dress size beyond their tolerance. Their youth is no longer in the mirror, and they wander to us looking for it. With us, they discover a hidden hero, an inner athlete, and we get to vicariously warm ourselves in the glow of their early successes and discovered joys. We celebrate their rapid progress. We feed their growing desire. We tell them the old stories that we've all heard before. How about that time we ran through the floods in the hail? Wasn't that goofy? And that time Bob tripped over the dog and took out the water stop table? Wasn't that a hoot? Like a Homo sapiens tribe passing down its magic incantations and hunting myths as they gorge on buffalo at the cave's entrance. It's our tribal knowledge, and the races are our campfires that we huddle around for warmth. We help the new members of the mid-pack through their first follies of overtraining and injury. Our collective knowledge of injury and cure dwarfs the physician's desk reference manual. We also accept the wandering cast-offs of other sports, other tribes. Ex-football, soccer, lacrosse, wrestlers, and sprinters come to us with their damaged knees and want to run. They want to taste again the sweat of life in their mouths and feel the fire in their bellies. And they add to the community pile with allusions of grandeur. They sweeten our soup with their experience. The tribe gathers for races on misty mornings. We gather like a pile of unmatched socks. We are there to be stronger together. For the next 20 minutes or 4 hours, we are part of something bigger. We are working cells in a larger organism. Without us, it would be a sparse and different beast. Our motley club of mid-pack fools has a collective competitiveness and joy that really makes no rational sense to the outside observer. But we know the secret handshake. We've all cracked the code, and all we need is our burning lungs, aching legs, and pounding hearts to tell us why. At the end of the day, there are no trophies in our hutch, but there is pride of accomplishment, nonetheless. There is pride and self-satisfaction in our hearts in such great heaps that it dwarfs us. It fuels our lives in ways that outsiders will never quite understand. It is the large stone dropped in the center of our pool that sends ripples to the edges. This is the Midpackers' lament. We are working-class heroes in our own dramas. We are the mythic stars of our own sagas. We have taken a lover that will never fully satisfy us, but that we cannot leave. I salute you, my friends. The next time you are standing in the middle of the pack at the starting line, turn to talk to those about you. Smile and say, "Thanks for coming out today. Without you all, we wouldn't have a race. You look great. We are going to have some fun." And we'll smile back and tell you an old story about this race that may make you laugh. Hey, folks. All right, folks, that's it. Another sterling episode of the Queen's Favorite Running Podcast. It's on all the earbuds at Windsor Palace. It's the Run, Run, Live podcast, and it is in the can. Thank you all for going for a ride with me again. Sorry for running so long today. Coming up on the schedule, I've got some more fantastic interviews lined up. I'm trying to hook up with my personal hero, Bill Rogers, Boston Billy himself. And I've got Sarah from the Goon Squad. I've got the Atlanta, Georgia ING Marathon people. I've got trained bears, dancing ponies, and high wire acts with no net. As for next week, I guess I'll just keep logging the miles with Buddy the Wonder Dogs. And as Bob Marley opined, my feet is my only carriage, so I've got to push on through. So remember, no woman, no cry. And I'll see you out there. The music today is the Demiras, I think. And the song is called Humanoid. And this one is a bit up-tempo, so you elderly runners, nursing and pregnant mothers, youngsters, y'all might want to fast-forward through this one because it rocks. Hey, I can't help it. I'm a product of nurture. In the 70s, all we had was disco and punk, and we had to choose, man. We really did. We didn't climb out of that musical wasteland until the 90s. We'll see you guys out.